is a veiled plutocracy.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
oh, yeah. Started to burn too many things we found. That's the Divine Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Solartopia song, back for another hour here. And we are once again dealing with the catastrophic mess in Ohio, the nuclear bailout. We did the show last week, and we're going to do it again this week, because we have since had a court decision, and not a good court decision, I'm afraid, on this ghastly, catastrophic, apocalyptic bailout for these two ready-to-explode nuclear plants on the on Lake Erie, Davis, Bessie, and Perry. We're going to be joined by four great experts, and we're going to really get to the bottom of this mess. Kevin Camps, you're with us?
Hello, Harvey. I'm here.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Glad to have you aboard. Dick Munson.
Hey, Harvey. Dick Munson here.
Dick, how are you? Good to hear from you. Dave Kraft.
I'm here, Harvey, in Chicago. Thank you.
Okay, and Joe DeMars?
Yep, I'm online.
All right, we got four guys. I'll get some angry mails about that, but that's the way we got to go. So, Joe, let's start with you. You're the Ohio boy from the Green Party. Dick, I understand you're in Columbus. Is that right?
I am, actually, yes.
Okay, so let's talk to Dick to Joe, and then we'll go to you, Dick, and then Kevin, and then Dave, and we're going to run through this nightmare. So, Joe, can you explain to us, please, about this court decision and what it means for the future of the bailout of the two nuclear plants on Lake Erie?
Okay, well, the basic situation was that a company called AMT, Advanced Microtechnologies, had been hired to gather the petition signatures to put HB6 on the ballot as a referendum in order to overturn it. And so that had it been put on the ballot, had the referendum gone through, then the HB6 would have been negated. There would have been no bailout for the nuke plants, no bailout for the coal plants. Unfortunately, because...
Joe, before you proceed, explain to us exactly, we have an hour here, and great experts, explain to us exactly what HB6, which is actually now in force, does.
Yes, HB6 has now become officially law since the referendum failed. What it does is it charges every Ohioan for a bailout for Ohio's two nuclear power plants, one named Perry, one named Davis Bessie, and it also charges Ohioans for two coal plants owned by OVEC. One is in Ohio and the other is in Indiana. And it does give a little bit of support to some existing solar projects, ones that had some political clout and were able to carve out a little bit from this disaster. But it also ends future support for wind and solar, and it ends Ohio's wonderful energy efficiency program, which had saved about $5 billion in energy costs since it was instituted. And that's basically it. It was pushed for by First Energy and First Energy Solutions, the owner of the nuke plants. The other Ohio utilities jumped on board once they were offered bailouts for their coal plants. And it's a bill that's opposed by a majority of Ohioans, In fact, in a recent poll, only 7% of Ohioans say they want more nuclear power. But it was supported with tens of millions of dollars by the utility companies, and they employed terrible tactics. But that's what it does. And so what the referendum effort was to put that on the ballot, and then the people of Ohio would have been able to vote yes or no on it. And the people who support HB 6, who want all that money, they knew that if it came to the public, if it came to a vote, they would lose because it's such a horrible bill. It's been called the worst energy policy in history. And unfortunately, the people who were gathering needed over 260,000, about 265,000 ballot signatures. They only collected about 221,000 signatures, which not only didn't make it, it also didn't give any, there was no buffer for invalid signatures. And so the petitions were not submitted. The deadline was last week Monday. And this past Monday. And so there was a court case asking the judge, a federal judge, for more time, saying that the Ohio's law governing referendums violated the First Amendment rights of Ohioans, since the people pushing for the petitions were not able to get their message across, saying, you know, explaining to the people, because A, the time was too short, and the Secretary of State used up 40 of the 90 days that is given for a petition referendum to go through, and B, that the thuggish practices that the used by the opponents of the referendum violated the First Amendment rights of every Ohioan, since the people who want the referendum weren't able to talk to, literally, physically, in many cases, weren't able to talk to other Ohioans because they would be surrounded by these blockers who would shout them down and just physically prevent anybody from getting to the petitions. So how's that? Is that a good summary?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, the bottom line here is that the people who want to preserve the bailout use fascist tactics, and really the term fascist applies here. They physically assaulted referendum gatherers. This is a new development in American history. I've never heard, and I've been following politics for half a century, and I've never encountered a situation in which referendum signature gatherers were physically assaulted by supporters of, you know, anything, including nuclear power. And so now this federal judge has kicked the case back to the Ohio Supreme Court, which is dominated by Republicans. Dick Munson, thank you, Joe, for that. Joe DeMar with the Ohio Green Party. And you yourself experienced some of that, didn't you? Tell us about that.
Yeah, I experienced some early on, before it really ramped up to really ugly, collecting petition signatures outside a library. A blocker showed up. He would yell and scream at anyone coming near us. He physically tried to block the entrance to the library and kept taunting us and tried to get us into arguments and fights, and did make some threats, said, you know, we will follow you, and then we will, and then he trailed off and left it to our imagination what he would do once they followed us wherever we went. It was very ugly. It was, I felt like I was back in Mussolini's Italy, basically, with the directly confronting fascism.
Unbelievable. Dick Munson, you're in Columbus. What can you tell about what's going on?
Well, I think what Joe said as far as First Energy and their creditors recognized that if this got on the ballot, they would lose. I mean, it's a very unpopular bill for all the reasons that were outlined. And so they were willing to spend whatever it took to make sure Ohioans didn't get a chance to vote on whether this should be the law of the state. And so you noted about the blockers, horrible stuff. There were death threats that people got. A friend of mine was actually yelled at and was, you know, given death threats while her kids were in the car. But they also gave bribes. They were willing to This was on tape. Give $2,500 to any signature collector if they gave them their collected signatures and a free ticket to fly back to wherever they happen to live. They bribed at much higher rates, you know, some of the vendors that were organizing the signature collecting. And then they had a massive advertising campaign that tried to just confuse the issue, suggesting that people who opposed the bailout were actually representatives of the Chinese government who were trying to control Ohio's grid and steal your personal information. And then they came up with their own supposed petition, which wasn't really a formal one, but was just something to cloud the issue so that people got confused about what things to sign. And they were willing to pay people, you know, twice, three times, even four times the amount that the anti-bailout signature collectors were going at. And the reason here is, which I think is critical to see, and I think it frames, you know, the challenges that we face moving forward. First Energy Solutions is now sort of controlled by a series of creditors, basically speculative hedge funds based in Wall Street. And they see this basically as the potential for a very high return on investment. If they spend $50 million bribing, advertising, you know, hiring blockers, that's a drop in the bucket relative to them getting a bailout worth about $1 billion. The return on investment is just extraordinary. So this was a business proposition, and they were willing to do whatever it took to make sure that Ohioans didn't get a chance to vote on their energy policy.
God, it's just mind-boggling. Dave Kraft, you want to jump in from Illinois here?
Thanks, Harvey. I would also mention it's really hard to hear you, so I don't know if there's an ability for you to up your mic, but that would be appreciated.
No, it's when we have four people on, that happens, but it comes through
well,
on the recording.
Situation
so just
in
go
Illinois,
ahead as long as you can hear me
my
well.
My condolences
enough
to you folks in Ohio. You're going through now what we went through from 2014 to 2016, where Exelon Corporation, the nation's not only largest nuclear utility but largest electric utility, pulled off another nuclear hostage crisis and kind of strong-armed the legislature into providing a $2.3 billion bailout for two troubled nuclear sites in Illinois. Well, they've sort of sophisticated their game a bit over the last few years, and now we have new energy legislation before us, and Exelon's approach has changed. They're not going for the straight-up bailout like your folks did in Ohio. They are making the case that because nuclear plants are essential in, to fight climate, which of course is not true, but that's their case, that those environmental benefits are not appreciated enough. And so the problem is that the market that we have here is at fault. So they're claiming that what needs to happen is a so-called market-based reform where in Illinois the state itself would create its own market just like PJM is. PJM is the transmission overseer for a large part of the country in which Illinois and Ohio are in. And by controlling our own market in that way, Exelon would be getting subsidized payments to three additional nuclear plants through something called the capacity market. Now, for your listeners, the capacity market is the second way that nuclear utilities and others make money, pretty much by making a promise. They promise that they will provide X number of kilowatt hours, but they promise that 3 years into the future. And then they make bids using their energy facilities, which are then secretly examined and selected by the local grid operators on the basis of cost. Now, none of their reactors were cheap enough to be selected, or a few of them weren't, and now they're saying that most of them won't be in the next go-round, so they want Illinois to take over this job and award selective preference to nuclear plants and, get this, also renewable energy, which would be solar and wind, because they also would be governed by this capacity market reform. What they're trying to do here is play up the issue that they are not the fossil fuel industry. They're not coal plants who would get the short end of the stick on a reformed market, but that somehow they're essential, just like the renewable energy community is in fighting climate change. We, of course, have been opposing that, and things were unfortunately creaking along as business as usual in Illinois. There's a saying that you can't swing a cat by the tail down in the Springfield Capitol without hitting an Exelon lobbyist, and that is true. However, there's been a new development in Illinois that really surprised us all, or I suppose it shouldn't, but it did. Over the last 4 or 5 months or so, the FBI has been subpoenaing various documents and testimonies from ex-lobbyists and present lobbyists who were affiliated with Commonwealth Edison, the subsidiary, and Exelon Corporation. And there's right now currently a rather large investigation going on their lobbying practices. This works its way all the way up to the Speaker of the House of the state legislature, Michael Madigan, who has largely been the power broker in Springfield for the last 30 years. In addition, we have a new governor, relatively new, that would be J.B. Pritzker of the Pritzker Billionaire Empire, who has made a campaign pledge when he was running that he was in favor of 100% renewables by 2050. So we have an awkward situation now where Exelon historically has had clout, but because they're under investigation by the FBI, a lot of the connected politicians have got to lay low for the next go-round. The problem with all this is there is a potential time crunch, and that one comes from the Trump administration. For the last few years, your listeners may be aware that the Trump administration has been trying to get bailouts for both coal plants and nuclear plants, and have failed so far. But there is a possibility that the FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, will be promulgating a rule not in the not-too-distant future that could actually begin to penalize both renewable energy and nuclear plants in the PJM area. So with that threat hanging over the region, Exelon and the renewables folks have been pressuring the state legislature to take quick action. As we say, though, we are opposed to the quick action because of the fact that Exelon will get another nuclear bailout disguised as a market mechanism. So you see, this is part of an ongoing national process. It's been going on since about 2013, where Exelon has been taking the lead in many cases and looking for creative ways of bailing out dysfunctional, uneconomic nuclear plants along the way. They hide under the guise of being environmentalists, and they're trying to say they're not the coal industry. But so far, not so good this year.
Okay, Dave Kraft, thank you very much for that. We'll get to Kevin in a minute. Joe DeMar, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that at the start of the HB6 process, they were all in on that nukes are renewables, and we want to promote both renewables and nuclear power. But as the coal plants got added in to pacify the other utilities, then they essentially dropped all the pretense, and they said, okay, it is a bailout bill. But in the first few months, in the first couple hearings, the legislators who were pushing this swore up and down it was not a bailout, and all they wanted to do was stop carbon pollution. And, but they changed their tune once a few more $100 million got tossed into that pot.
Right. So what we have here is a pattern, obviously. Dave Kraft talking to us from Illinois, and, of course, Dick Munson is based in Chicago as well, and Joe DeMar with the Ohio Green Party. Kevin Camps is always looking at the big picture here. And this fiasco with the referendum in Ohio really bodes ill for the ability of the public to stop these bailouts. If these guys are going to put stormtroopers into the streets to terrorize signature gatherers, I don't know where we're going to be able to have a referendum process. Now, this decision from the federal judge throws the fate of the referendum in Ohio to the Ohio Supreme Court, about which we're not optimistic. Kevin Camps, what's your overview here of the general situation?
Thanks, Harvey. I just wanted to put some figures out there for listeners to think about maybe some other aspects. You hinted at the risks, the safety risks associated with keeping these old reactors running. And what I did was I looked up an old Nuclear Regulatory Commission report that would never have even seen the light of day but for Ed Markey, who's now a U.S. Senator from Massachusetts. When he was in the House back in the early 80s, he forced the NRC to divulge these figures. The report is most commonly referred to as CRAC 2, Calculation of Reactor Accident Consequences. And what it did at the time in 1982 was it looked at what are some worst-case scenarios if there's a meltdown at the atomic reactors in this country. So they looked at each reactor. They actually got the Sandia National Lab in New Mexico to do the grunt work on the research, but the report was commissioned by the NRC. And so here are the figures for Davis-Bessey, which I'm much more familiar with Davis-Bessey than I am with Perry. I could look those figures up, too. But for Davis-Bessey, here's the figures. So one category is peak early fatalities. That means acute radiation poisoning deaths. And the figure is 1,400 at Davis-Bessey. If there is a meltdown, if containment fails, 1,400 people could die from acute radiation poisoning. Another category is peak early injuries. These are radiation injuries, and that figure for Davis-Bessey is 73,000. And then another category is peak cancer deaths. These are latent cancer fatalities that could take years to unfold, and that figure is 10,000 at Davis-Bessey. And the fourth category is property damage, and this is in 1982 dollars. At Davis-Bessey, it was $84 billion. So adjusting for inflation, that would take it closer to $200 billion in today's dollar figures. And another important point to point out, and this was pointed out by Jeff Don at the Associated Press in 2011, post-Fukushima, he had a series of articles about aging nukes in the United States. And one of the articles was devoted to the fact that these figures in this CRAC 2 report from 1982 were based on 1970 U.S. Census data. So, of course, casualties would be much higher these days in northern Ohio. Populations have soared around nuclear power plants like Davis-Bessey. And that's something for folks to keep in mind, is it's not just the dollars and cents on your electric bill. It is the risk of playing another 6 years' worth of radioactive Russian roulette at an atomic reactor like Davis-Bessey.
Right. And, of course, you know, the nuclear industry loves to say, A, nobody was killed at Three Mile Island, except I went to Three Mile Island after the accident, and I interviewed people, and the dead and dying were everywhere. They didn't like to say that a handful of people were killed at Chernobyl, and in fact, the major study by the three Russian scientists at Chernobyl that came out in the early 2000s said basically a million people at least were killed at Chernobyl. Now they're saying that nobody is harmed at Fukushima, and we know that hundreds of times more cesium was released at Fukushima than at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Dick Munson, this is all making our heads spin here. What do you see as the big picture? Well, first of all, why are you in Columbus? And what do you see the big picture happening next in Ohio?
Well, I guess I'm in Columbus trying to figure out with some of our allies what the next steps are. The thing that worries me the most out of this is what you sort of alluded to, and that is that the lesson I think that this gives to the polluters is that aggressiveness pays. If, in fact, you can remove all the traditional limits to things that you're willing to do to, you know, block the democratic process, I think the unfortunate lesson in Ohio is, at least to date, you can get away with it if you're willing to spend money. And I think that the you know, the players have changed a bit, as I alluded to before. I mean, it has traditionally been, you know, the coal companies or the nuclear industry itself or the utility companies that are doing it. But now, particularly with First Energy Solutions, because it got spun off, went into bankruptcy, it's now a bunch of Wall Street hedge funds that are the major creditors who I think look at trying to figure out how they can either shed expenses and therefore make their investment more valuable. But in this case, I think their judgment is how much can I spend that will give me a huge return on investment if, in fact, I get the government to give me a massive bailout. So I think we're somewhat facing a new threat, an economic threat, and a willingness to go to extremes that we have not seen before. And I think for all of us, as we think about more environmental campaigns, we need to be more sort of creative about ensuring that there's more transparency, so we know who, in fact, these people are that are putting up this money. We ensure that there is, in fact, more time to allow people to gather the signatures to, you know, challenge laws that are stupid that the legislature approves. We've got to really step back and think that our opponents have upped their game, and we need to, I think, creatively defend democracy, let alone defend the environment.
Well, this is pure fascism, what happened in Ohio. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. These people that they put in the field to terrorize signature gatherers, these are stormtroopers. I mean, you know, they use physical violence. You know, they had three of these blockers surrounding one signature gatherer. You know, this is, for all the difficulties we've had with American democracy, this is fascism, pure and simple. And, you know, I don't know where we go from here. If these guys can put thugs in the field to oppose a referendum like this, what can't they do? You know, no one was arrested. I think one person was indicted and is facing criminal charges for knocking the cell phone out of the hand of a signature gatherer and then stomping on it. And it happened to be a security camera that got that all on tape. But what we're looking at here is the death of the referendum process. I mean, A, the Secretary of State sat on the petition for 40 of the 90 days, and then law enforcement has done nothing to prevent this kind of physical assault against signature gatherers. Dave Kraft, did you experience anything like that in Illinois? Dave, did you hear me?
Would you repeat that, Harvey? I didn't catch it.
Did you experience in Illinois anything like this physical attack, these physical attacks on signature gatherers?
No, we haven't. It's a different situation here, though, than what's going on in Ohio. As I say, you know, those folks in Ohio are dealing with a straight-up bailout situation, and the coalition that's aligned against the utilities includes the environmental community, the renewable energy community, those kind of folks. It's different in Illinois because we have a very peculiar alliance going on with a lot of the Illinois environmental community with the Exelon Corporation because they're concerned about that capacity market reform. So it's a situation where Exelon, in a sense, is backing off, kind of letting perhaps the environmental community carry the water because renewables would be punished as well as nuclear plants. So you don't get that kind of antagonism as you do with the straight-out thugs in Ohio. There is going to be a half a dozen enormous, and I mean enormous bills, hundreds of pages of bills, that are going to have to be reconciled. The hope was they would get it done in a six-day session in the fall, but that's going to be impossible. So the governor at some point is going to have to intervene. And it's much more of a quiet negotiation, sort of backroom
deal setting than it is going on the street corners to get referendums and having people out supporting or opposing bills. I think, you know,
well,
Dick and Joe mentioned having to get creative. And I'd like to throw out some proposals here on what that might look like. There's a possibility that we could take their language, whether in Ohio or Illinois, and turn it against them. For example, one of the things we are considering, and I don't mind sharing this publicly because we're going to mention it in Illinois eventually, the language we hear is that the nuclear plants should be rewarded for their exceptional environmental benefits. And they point to, of course, not producing carbon dioxide when they generate electricity. Well, if that's the case, maybe renewable energy and energy efficiency should also be rewarded for its unique environmental benefits of not producing nuclear waste. So in the case of Illinois and other states we're seeing, there have been these devices called ZECs, zero emission credits, that have been created, which are available to both renewable energy sources and the nuclear people. Well, maybe it's time to create ZERCs, zero radiation credits, which get the same job done in the atmosphere without producing radioactive waste. That's the kind of thinking and creativity maybe we need to get to. There would be law and precedent that's been passed.
Okay.
So why not ZERCs too? It kind of undercuts them using their own language, and I think maybe that's the route we have to go.
Joe DeMar, what are people talking about next steps in Ohio to deal with what's been done to the referendum here?
Well, you might turn that question to our fellow in Ohio, in Columbus right now. Right now, I think a lot of people are just in the trying to figure out what exactly happened, the full assessment thing. One thing about this whole situation that I think it might be good for us to review is what actually is wrong with fascism. I mean, the whole idea that Mussolini had, you know, sounds great on the surface. You just give the corporations the ability to run the government and make the policies and the laws, and then the trains will run on time and everything will run like a business. It'll all be like clockwork. And but of course, what's happened in Italy is what inevitably happens, is that the corporations found it was much easier to just get the money by sucking off the government funding sources, and they didn't actually have to worry about getting the trains to run on time, or in this case, keeping the nuke plants running safely. As long as they could just get that money directly, you know, why provide the service as long as you're getting the money? So I think that it's very dangerous to get into any kind of bed with Exelon. And I think that the solution...
I think we lost you, Joe.
Cooperation with them. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, Dick Munson, you've been mentioned here. You're in Columbus. What kind of strategies are you hearing from people about what we do next in response to this catastrophe with the referendum?
Well, I think that, you know, we have to be honest. Everybody is a little shell-shocked by both the aggressiveness of the blockers and, you know, just the lack of holding, you know, people who are breaking the law accountable. So near term, I mean, we do appeal to the Ohio Supreme Court. There's sort of no surprise that that's the forum in which this would get heard. Yes, I'm skeptical of them, but I must say in the last couple of months, they have sided with the environmental community against First Energy on a couple of issues. So I'm not willing to, you know, ignore that option totally. But, you know, we're also facing some new bills before the General Assembly that aren't quite as bad as HB6, but they're really terrible in giving utilities just more control, basically getting rid of whatever, you know, token competition existed in Ohio, sort of opening the door so that the utilities can control even more assets. So there's unfortunately more rear guard action that needs to be done at the General Assembly. But, you know, I think it comes back to we need a better General Assembly. And also, I think we need to start highlighting those places in Ohio where, in fact, good things are happening. And that tends to be at the urban centers, where you have a series of mayors that have very strong sustainability and pro-clean energy provisions that they've been advancing. I think we need to highlight them and empower them and have them be sort of the next generation of folks that are true Buckeyes that, you know, see the potential for bringing investment and jobs, clean energy investment and jobs into the state.
Kevin Camps, you want to build on that?
Yeah, I did have a chance to look up those Perry numbers from the CRAC 2 report. So here they are. At Perry, the risks include, if there's a meltdown and catastrophic release, 5,500 peak early fatalities, a really whopping figure for peak early injuries of 180,000, peak cancer deaths, 14,000, and property damage in today's dollars of well over $200 billion. So I wanted to mention that, you know, Dick Munton does great write-ups called First Energy Facts that I encourage listeners to check out and subscribe to. But I did want to give a shout-out as well to the group Energy and Policy Institute, Dave Anderson over there, who just on October 21st published a really great analysis of the behind-the-scenes lobbyists essentially writing the testimonials for public elected officials, county commissioners, and school board presidents in northern Ohio who spoke out in favor of HB6 at the state legislature, in some cases entirely writing the commentary provided by the public officials at these legislative hearings. So the analysis, the transparency, the shining the light on what has happened, the analysis of what has happened to defend our democracy, as Dick put it, there is a, an after-the-fact analysis that has to happen to show what's happened, how this is the best democracy that money can buy at this point, unfortunately, so we can figure out what to do to push back.
Well, there are a number of things. I had a conversation with Ned Ford, who's an expert on for Ohio, and there may be a number of ways around First Energy. So, you know, Ohio is technically, allegedly deregulated, and if we can start offering people alternatives to First Energy and just cut the bottom out of their market, we may be able to make some steps forward. And there are also, some progress with renewables in Ohio. The utility companies are terrified of renewables, as is the legislature, which is completely corrupt and gerrymandered. So I think that we're going to see some creativity coming forward here in getting around this thing. And hopefully for First Energy, it will turn out to be a situation of be careful what you wish for, because I don't think people are going to stand for this in Ohio. As Dick Benson mentioned, there's less than 10% support for this bailout among the populace in Ohio. And these ads that these idiots ran with the Chinese soldiers goose-stepping through Beijing, I mean, this was like, Monty Python stuff. I mean, it's completely out there. I have to say also, as in a high end for many years, that the response of the media in Ohio was quite surprising. Joe DeMar, maybe you want to comment on this. We had a lot of support in opposition to HB6 from the normally very corporate conservative Ohio media, and a lot of horror registered at the fascism involved with the campaign. Do you want to comment on that?
Yes, that was one good thing in this whole battle, is that almost every editorial board in the state
opposed HB6. And even the Columbus Dispatch, which is normally an extremely conservative paper, has just had no holds barred on saying that, you know, the tactics being used by these thugs essentially are undermining democracy itself, and saying that the referendum should have succeeded. It's kind of amazing. Just like the coalition that came together to oppose HB6 was kind of amazing. It had everybody in it, from the libertarians to the Greens to the Ohio Manufacturers Association to the Sierra Club, you know, that all the media, almost the entire media based in Ohio came out in opposition to the tactics of the thugs and in opposition to HB6. So that just gives you an idea of how deeply unpopular and wrong this whole thing is.
Well, Dick,
Harvey, can I build on that in Chicago? I'd like to hop on that one a minute.
The coalition
too.
Really was quite amazingly diverse. The thing that surprised me was the conservative think tanks, the R Street Institute, Americans for Prosperity, the Buckeye Institute. These are not groups that usually are in any coalition that environmentalists deign to be involved in. But they are expressing conservative principles, and in this case, conservative principles support markets rather than subsidies. And they thought that HB6 was nothing but a giveaway, a bailout to corporate cronyism, and were, you know, vehemently opposed to it. So there are odd, bedfellows that can be made that we haven't done before, but I think we also have to come back and think this is not totally, you know, a conservative versus liberal, issue, because in this instance, you know, the true conservatives were not out there advancing subsidies and bailouts for nuclear reactors or coal-fired power plants.
Dave Kraft, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that we're all under the same problem of the legislature or the governor, in some cases, are the controllers. You know, they're the ones who cut the deals, get the people in the back rooms. I have to tell you folks that it's amazing just how chilly it's become in Illinois now that the FBI is involved. So I don't know how you get the FBI involved, but it occurs to me that perhaps there are some RICO violations that might be going on in Ohio where some of those opponents, whether in the press, the journalists, or whoever, could do a little investigative digging.
I think that's a great idea. I mean, this was really a operation. You know, First Energy has a reputation for potential links to organized crime. And this whole operation that they ran with these thugs, this was right out of The Godfather. And I don't know, Dick, you're there in Columbus. I mean, the idea, this is the first I've heard of it, but the idea, so thanks to Dave for that, but the idea of a RICO investigation, I mean, that's something that I think will resonate in the state. What do you think, Dick?
There certainly have been efforts, sort of quiet ones behind the scenes, to track the various, abuses that have happened. Not only just the assault of the one case that you made, but there are numerous others of bribing people to destroy petitions, which is in fact a felony. So there's been a lot of behind the scenes effort to try and muster the evidence to advance an investigation, both to the Secretary of State, to his credit, had come out on a couple of times, a Republican, and argued that the bailout proponents needed to knock it off because their tactics were, inappropriate. Knock it off is not strong enough, noting, you know, the horribleness that was going on. But I think there's a real potential, and I think, you know, Dave is right to bring up, you know, the potential for federal, charges, because some of these activities that we've seen here in Ohio are, in fact, felonies that need to be prosecuted.
Well, I suggested, and Dick, while you're in town, you need to get in touch with Bob Fitrakis, I don't know if you know him. He's been a frequent guest on my show, and we've been co-conspirators for more than 30 years, but he's an attorney. And what we did after, and a professor at Columbus State, and what we did after the 2004 election, where a lot of similar stuff went on, is that we held public hearings so that people could come forward, like Joe DeMar, who personally experienced this kind of strong-arm fascist mobster tactic. And what I want to do is early in November hold a public hearing so that anybody who experienced this stuff can either testify in public, and we'll put it on YouTube and videotape it, which we did in 2004, or send in affidavits, and we can have people read them. But this, I think that you might want to, whoever you're working with, and you should call Bob, is float the idea of a public hearing so that we can
Let's talk offline, as they say, but I think you're onto something quite good here.
Yes. Well, actually, the public hearings we held in Columbus, Jerry Nadler came. So the circle is unbroken there. We had Jerry Nadler and other people from, I think Maxine Waters actually came. And we had a pretty substantial congressional representation at the 2004 hearings. Well, they were in 2005, after the Ohio election. And it was a very, very powerful tool. And given, you know, the response of the Ohio media to these mobster tactics, you know, we're all getting accustomed to this stuff because of Fredo there in the White House. But this is something that we need to deal with. And I think I talked to someone on the phone who was offered money and simultaneously threatened. And, you know, this is the core of our democracy here. I don't have to tell you guys that, but this is terrifying stuff. And I think a public hearing would draw pretty good attention and also be extremely effective. And Kevin Camps, I wanted to mention, you've been raising the, and it's important in this show that we talk about this, you've been raising the health and safety aspects of Perry and Dave especially, which are also, of course, terrifying. And one thing we have to understand in all this is that there is no more regulation or inspection of the nuclear power plants in the United States. I mean, however much a rubber stamp and a farcical operation the Nuclear Regulatory Commission used to be, under Trump, it's essentially non-existent. I mean, Michael Keegan in Michigan has documented variance after variance after variance that the Perry and Dave especially have been provided by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. We have five commissioners on the NRC. Three of them are Trump people, which basically means there's no NRC. And do you want to comment on that real quick? Also tell people how they can get a hold of you, because we're getting close to the end of the hour.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I wanted to remember another, you know, autopsy of what's happened in the last several months in Ohio. During the legislative debate, the Trump 2020 campaign at the highest level in Ohio intervened and made personal calls to Republican legislators saying, you got to vote for this, because there were Republicans who voted against this bill. And that intervention likely made the difference in the vote in the Ohio legislature. So yet another potential criminality there, because did they report any of that to the Federal Election Commission? Because their argument was, you have to vote for this. If the nuke plants close down, Trump's going to lose in Ohio in 2020. So another, you know, terrible moment in this whole thing. And you're right about the lack of regulation. Michael Keegan has documented that, you know, whatever FirstEnergy is asking for at Davis, Bessie, and Perry, they are getting, and they are asking for a lot. And it's a rubber stamp from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission at this point. And the last thing I'd like to mention, some more great reporting by the Cincinnati Inquirer. They contacted Chinese-American and Asian-American organizations in Ohio who had a lot to say about the racism of this Chinese conspiracy theory. So Yeah, I would like to put out our website, which is beyondnuclear.org, and folks can look at the nuclear costs section, COSTS costs, and there I've tried to keep a running tally of the media coverage of what's going on in Ohio, which has been, you know, really commendable.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, you know, I've been terrified of the nuclear reactors, especially Perry and Davis Bessie. I mean, Perry is the first American reactor to be harmed by an earthquake, 1986. And I grew up in Ohio. We never thought about earthquakes in Ohio, but they managed to get one hit. Perry was hit by an earthquake in 1986, and Davis Bessie just has is probably the reactor in the whole world most likely to blow up. I mean, that's
well, remember,
is
it's
an
absolute
its
concrete
wreck.
Containment shield building is severely cracked, which essentially means its containment is structurally dubious. So if there is a meltdown,
right,
it's probably going to get out.
Right, and so now not only are we terrified of the nuclear plants, but we're terrified of the Nazis coming in and destroying the referendum process. It's devastating. Dave Kraft, real quick, you want to tell us how people can get a hold of you and throw in your last words here?
Well, thank you. Yeah, we are available in Illinois at NEIS, www.neis.org. The one issue I think we haven't covered today that you have to look at moving forward is the issue that's called just transitions. This cuts across not just the specifics of the nukes and the coal plants, but it kind of unites the communities that would be affected when these plants close, and they will close. So looking forward, I think we have to do some organizing with the environmental justice community and the various people of color communities that nuclear and coal closures become a justice issue. You have to have plans in place prior to their closure, not after their closure, to protect the communities. And I think those are winning arguments if we can get out there and do the kind of organizing that we're supposed to be doing.
Okay, really good. David, honor to have you on here. Joe DeMar from Ohio, what do you think and what's next?
Yeah, well, I think that we do have to do some coalition building, and I don't think we should let this drop. I don't think we should just let First Energy have this, because one thing, I mean, as much as they're going to profit from this whole thing, we have cost them a lot. I mean, because we kept fighting and wouldn't even give up after the law passed, they have had to spend tens of millions of dollars, and their reputations, you know, among Ohioans have just plummeted because people know First Energy is behind all this ugliness somewhere, First Energy and First Energy Solutions. So I think the main thing is we keep fighting. We don't know what's going to happen, but we're not going to give up. And I have a website. It's joedemarforagreenfuture.org. That's D-E-M-A-R-E. So J-O-E-D-E-M-A-R-E-F-O-R, agreenfuture.org, if you want to get in touch with me.
All right, and you're with the Green Party, which is still kicking in Ohio. Dick Munson, you're going to get the last words here. You're in Columbus. Nobody's walking away from this. And
This is we've witnessed something horrible, and we have to respond both to it and also think creatively about other ways around. There was some, you had asked how to reach each of us, and somebody kindly noted that I've done a series of snarky sort of blogs about First Energy. So if you Google EDF on First Energy, EDF being Environmental Defense Fund on First Energy, you'll come to a page that has a variety of newsletter blog pieces about some of the horribleness that this company has done over the last several years.
Well, and it was pointed out to me by Ned Ford that there is something in the Ohio code that says that you can't really be forced to pay for electricity that you don't use. And this can be a hook. You're organizing there in Columbus, you know, this HB6 is technically illegal as it applies to people who are being forced to contribute to these nuclear plants who don't get any electricity from them. And, you know, it's utterly outrageous. Of course, they did it in New York. They bailed out these nuclear plants upstate, and people all over New York are being forced to pay for them. I assume that's going on in Illinois and in New Jersey and the other places where bailouts are in the offing. But this fight, we can't lose. I mean, the good news is that we have the vast majority of the Ohio population on our side. We even have the Ohio media on our side. And I got to say that, you know, it's weird to be in bed with the oil and gas industry, but they came in with a ton of money to fight these guys. And we need to win this. And so we'll talk offline, Dick, but this is a fight that we cannot, you know, not only is it the nuclear fight, not only is these two reactors, two of the very worst in the world, but now they've really gone after the core of American democracy. I have never seen, and of course, you know, if they're doing it for a referendum in Ohio, they can do it for Trump in 2020. I mean, you're going to see these blockers turning up at polls in African American and Hispanic and student areas. I mean, this is the template for a fascist takeover. I mean, there's no way around it. And Dick, you're there. I mean, what are people telling you about how they're going to react?
Well, I think everybody, you know, is, again, shell-shocked but immobilized because, like you, this cannot stand. It's an attack both on, you know, our energy and environmental future, but it's also an attack on our democracy. And there's lots of things to do and lots of options. We need to be strategic and creative, but nobody's given up. This cannot stand.
Absolutely. So I've been putting pieces up on the Internet, folks. You can look at freepress.org, which is based in Columbus, laprogressive.com, Smirking Chimp, reader-supported news, op-ed news, BuzzFlash, ScoopNZ. But I'm going to put up another piece tomorrow about this. This is the severest attack. We've been through 3 years of Trump now, and we know what a nightmare that is. We know what it's like to, live in a country run by the mob, which is what he is. He's just basically a mobster. He's owned by Putin, who's the Don Corleone of Donald Trump. I've had people on talking about that. And this is a First Energy is a mob operation. And that's what they did in this election. And as Joe mentioned, this is like Mussolini. This is like Hitler. This is like Bolsonaro in Brazil. We can't let this happen. We can't let this go by in Ohio. We did see it in Ohio in 2004. The corporate Democrats did nothing. And I don't think we can count on the corporate Democrats to fight this out either. We've got HB6 could not have passed without Democratic Party votes. And so we're on our own. Thank you, guys. A great, great show. Keep up. We'll see you next week. Thank you, people in New York. And we'll see you next week in Solartopia. Give them hell.
We got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're going to have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're going to have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost.